Hey, what do you know? Do you know enough to pass the citizenship test given to immigrants applying for U.S. citizenship? Okay, here's a question for you. What are two rights of everyone living in the United States? I mean, everyone. My guest today is Steve Krupa, and he is a candidate for the Tacoma Municipal Judgeship, Position 3. So, Steve, can you answer this question with your extensive law background?
Sure, I can, Louisa. So, of course, everyone has rights that are enumerated in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. So, two rights that we could talk about there would be freedom of expression, freedom of speech. You know, there's many rights, especially as an attorney, rights that are familiar to me and my all-time favorites, if you will, are the right to a trial by jury, as well as the right against unreasonable search and seizures. And obviously, I was a criminal defense attorney for over 25 years, so those are important rights to me.
I always wonder about definitions. So, you know, it's like, what's unreasonable? I don't expect you to answer that right now and here and now, but you know, you got to think about these things because
right. That's
what counts, seems to me, when you are defending someone.
Of course, absolutely.
Yeah. And then with the trial, if I remember right, I think it says a speedy trial.
Well, there is a right to a speedy trial, and in Washington, that's also explained in court rules. Unfortunately, the right to a speedy trial is sort of eroded by case law here in our state and really across the country. But yes, we try to do things in a timely manner. So for people that are out of custody, the basic rule is that their trial needs to be done within 90 days. So either their trial or their case disposed of within 90 days of their arraignment. If they're in custody, it's 60 days.
Wow. So this leads me to a question from the bio that you sent, that
sure.
You had been a judge pro tem.
Yep.
And from what I understand, that arose because of the caseload that has been piling up?
Yes and no. I serve as a pro tem judge both in the Tacoma Municipal Court and in the Pierce County District Court. And really, it's not so much the caseload in both of those courts as to why we have pro tem judges. It's so that the judges themselves can get breaks. So if they're on vacation, or if they need to go to training, or if they're sick, someone would fill in for them. And, of course, the other judges can't do it because they're running their own docket. So, really, a pro tem judge is sort of like a substitute judge. Now, we have in Tacoma Municipal Court a fellow who is retired, who is essentially serving as a judge pro tem. I'm not sure if we're calling him a pro tem judge or an actual judge now. I think probably a judge. And he's there because, yes, there was only one sitting judge, Judge Henke, and they needed somebody to come in and fill the role that was vacated by Judge Christopher when he left for the Pierce County District Court. Now, in our Pierce County Superior Court, judge pro tems, one could say that, especially in the family law world, they're very necessary because, yeah, there's a lot of cases that need to get adjudicated. So the judge pro tems are really important in the civil world, in the Superior Court.
Mm-hmm. So you have served as a judge pro tem?
Yes, in both courts,
yes.
in District Court, Pierce County District Court, and Tacoma Muni.
So what are the qualifications for someone to serve as a judge?
Well, in Washington, really, it's funny. You only have to be a lawyer for 5 years under our court rules to apply to be a judge.
Any type of lawyer?
Any type of lawyer. It's funny. Frankly, you don't see a lot of people with just 5 years of experience running for judge or trying to be a judge. I mean, in my experience, by the time I was a lawyer for 5 years, I had done major felony trials and civil trials, but I really didn't know which. I mean, I thought I was pretty good, but I don't know if I knew which way was up, really. So, but, you know, you would expect, I think the rule anticipates that in 5 years you'd have a well-rounded understanding of the law and at least be somewhat qualified to try to be a judge.
So you've served as a pro tem judge.
Mm-hmm.
So why are you running for the Tacoma Municipal
sure.
Court?
thinking back, I think the first time I actually appeared in Tacoma Municipal Court was in 1994, which is also the year I got my bar number, but this was before I was a full-fledged lawyer. I was a Rule 9 lawyer, and I actually tried a case in there with Superior Court Judge Michael Schwartz.
Okay,
now.
Wait, back up a little.
Sure.
Case 9, would you say?
Oh, Rule 9.
Rule 9.
Sure.
Rule.
So what Rule 9 means, it's a Washington State court rule, and it allows law students or people who are reading for the law, in other words, people that haven't gone to law school but are trying to be lawyers, to appear in court under this Rule 9. They need to be supervised by a supervising attorney, but they can appear in court and do certain things, and especially in misdemeanor courts. And it's a good way to train young lawyers, people that are in law school who want a career in litigation or in the courts. So I knew that I wanted to be a trial attorney, so I entered a Rule 9 program, and as a law student, I was fortunate enough to get into court a lot and actually do two trials as a Rule 9. But getting back to Tacoma Municipal Court, that was the first time I appeared there. And of course, as an attorney, I must have represented, I don't know, I feel like I represented 1,000 people in that court over my over 25 years of practice. I don't know if it was that many, but it feels like it. And I did a number of jury trials there. But Tacoma Municipal Court, you know, it's our home court. It's where the rubber meets the road. It's the lowest level court in our criminal justice system, and we can talk about that later. But I feel it's an important court, and I also feel that, especially lately, the court suffered some issues with its reputation. There's been some decisions that probably shouldn't have been made. You know, there's some things that I and a number of attorneys over the years have always thought needed to be changed in that court. And for example, one of the things that always bothered me about Tacoma Municipal Court is they never really had a functioning probation department. That's something that I'd like to see. Mm-hmm. They also never really had a full-blown therapeutic court program, and we can talk about that later. I'm sure that's a big topic you want to discuss.
Huge.
But and then, of course, as I said, there were some issues with rulings and things like that that I think probably could have been done differently. And so the court, in the eyes of the public, and especially in the eyes of communities of color, kind of were really upset with the way the court was doing things. And so, again, as someone who's lived here for 31 years, and I just thought, yeah, I need to get in there and try and help this court. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I want to do my civic duty, frankly.
Yeah, and you're well suited for that.
Well, thank you.
I mean, you know, I can only do certain things with my civic duty. Now, you've talked about compassionate accountability.
Right.
So what does that mean?
So, yeah, that's a term that I use a lot. And when I say compassionate accountability, it goes back to what I was talking about when I mentioned therapeutic courts. So you may have heard the term therapeutic courts or community courts. And I guess courts is sort of a misnomer because they're dockets. It's not a whole separate court system. It's a docket that would, for example, handle people with mental health issues. So when I say compassionate accountability, when people are found guilty of a crime or I think of entering into a plea bargain, and there's an issue, let's say, regarding their mental health, and the mental health issue contributed to, in large part, why they committed the crime. Well, my theory of compassionate accountability is this. We should, in our court system, have a way to offer these people programs and services whereby if they entered into this quote-unquote court or docket, the mental health court, let's say, and agreed to get into treatment, get on their meds, etc., what we could do is monitor their progress either through review hearings or other ways. And if they successfully complete their program, we could dismiss their case. So it's compassionate because it's helping people get the treatment programs and services that they need. And it's accountability because we're not you know, we're holding them accountable for their actions. Obviously, when they enter into these programs, these dockets, these courts, they need to complete what they're signing up for. So, for example, Pierce County District Court has a veterans court. It's also a lower level court, like Tacoma Municipal Court. They have a veterans court. They have a mental health court. Pierce County Superior Court has a drug court, a mental health court. Many of our surrounding communities and their municipal courts have these therapeutic dockets. And again, the theory is, look, some people need these services, but of course they need to be held accountable. But jail is not the answer in these cases. You know, in these lower level crimes, the most jail they could get would only be a year anyway. But really, you know, you don't want to put somebody with a mental health issue that's causing them to commit crimes in jail. It just doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think this is an idea that's time has come. Mm-hmm. Again, it's not anything that's novel. Other courts here in this county do it and in the same building do it. Yeah. So it's nationwide.
The question I want to ask is, so with the municipal court, mm-hmm. what sorts of crimes are we looking at
sure.
that you deal with?
So the municipal court is a court of limited jurisdiction. So that means it can only see crimes that are either misdemeanors or gross misdemeanors. So obviously a big one there is DUI, which is a gross misdemeanor. Mm-hmm. Domestic violence, these are, you know, assault fourth degree, lower level assaults, not the violent assaults we see in felony land. And the superior courts. And then what I like to say is the quality of life type crimes that we see, like criminal trespass, destruction of property, theft third degree, which is your lower level shoplifting. A lot of these crimes are the crimes that we see being committed by young people, homeless people, people with issues. And I'm not saying that, you know, people without those issues don't commit those crimes as well. And I guess as a former defense attorney and as somebody who's going to be a judge, I should say accused of those crimes mm-hmm. at this point. But again, those are the type of crimes that we see in the Tacoma Municipal Court. It also does traffic infractions. Those are generally handled by a commissioner, though, who's not a full-fledged judge. He or she is appointed by the court to handle those types of cases.
And the whole thing is that it's a whole issue of public safety
right.
that keeps coming up. I know that there are ads out about the state representatives, you know, increasing crime because of their vote for a certain bill that just had to do with police equipment, if I understand it right. But it seems to me that the crimes that people would be most upset about would be the crimes that you're talking about, as far as like trespassing, maybe breaking, I don't know, breaking and entering, if that's...
Well, most of those breaking and enterings arise to felonies.
Okay.
But the trespassing can be somewhat similar. So
sure,
yes.
sure. You know, but shoplifting
yes.
and, you know, some of these kinds of things that come up. You know, there's also like this big thing about catalytic converters.
Right, right.
So I don't know if that rises to the felony standard.
It does.
Okay.
And it's
okay.
Just so you know, when we talk certain crimes that you might think would be misdemeanors, these thefts and things, it's all controlled by the dollar amount. So
okay.
things like catalytic converters and even shoplifting, if it's over a certain amount of money, mm-hmm. it becomes a felony.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So then what can judges do about this issue?
Well, you know, I think that what I'm seeing a lot is I'm seeing repeat offenders. In some cases, I'm seeing people whose parents I represented in the early 90s. And these were people who had drug issues, and now their kids have drug issues, and et cetera, et cetera. And it's like a vicious cycle or circle or whatever you want to call it. What I see and what I think is that's where this compassionate accountability, these therapeutic courts come in. Some of these people, especially before they get into the world of committing felonies, perhaps we can stop the cycle. The theory is to stop the cycle, to stop the recidivism by saying, okay, look, you got a drug issue or you got a mental health issue or, you know, you're a veteran and you're still suffering from what you saw over there. So let's say, okay, why don't we offer you these services? And if you successfully complete this, you're getting help, and hopefully this help addresses what caused you to commit these crimes. And you know, if it works, then we break the cycle, and these people become functioning members of our community again. So that's the theory. And again, it's, you know, it's not going to be 100% successful. It never is, but it's something to do, and it's a start.
Yeah.
You know, the Pierce County Drug Court program has been around since, I think, 94, and I was there at the beginning working in that court. And I've had failures in that court, certainly with my clients, but I've had some wonderful success stories of people who were, you know, stone-cold junkies, and they got the help that they needed. And, you know, I just met a guy the other day who was fixing my car, and we were talking about his graduation from the drug court program, you know.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, this, in a way, parallels the work that I've been doing for the last 25 years, because I have been a consultant for pet behavior problems, and I've done a lot of work with aggressive dogs, and punishment does not work. Mm-hmm. Punishment makes it worse. And so you have to address the root cause and use behavior modification, medications, you know, whatever that sort of thing might be for humans. I think it's probably very similar.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So I like it. I think you're on the right track.
Thanks. I didn't come up with it, but yeah, I think it's a great idea. It's another tool in the court's tool belt,
right?
You know, for us to do our part. You know, we want to do justice, but we also want to be compassionate and do what's right to help people and to, you know, serve the community.
So in a way, it goes beyond compassion as far as it goes into effectiveness.
Right, exactly.
So a couple of other questions that I have, because there's a number of things that stood out for me. Well, just pretty basic. I mean, you got your JD at mm-hmm. the University of Puget Sound.
Right.
So you're very local. Have you always lived in Tacoma?
No, I came out here in, I guess it was 91. No, I was born in Paterson, New Jersey. And so I lived in northern New Jersey, you know, urban New Jersey and New York City. So before I came out here, that's where I was.
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of city experience.
Yeah, and suburbs. But.
Yeah. Also, what caught my eye is that you've done some writing, different articles, and for like Pierce County Lawyer and whatnot.
Yep.
One that caught my eye is titled Practicing Law with Someone You Love.
Yeah.
I love that title. Could you explain what's
sure.
it about?
That was a lot of fun. And I wrote that, well, it was a piece for fun for our bar. And what I did was I went around and I interviewed people who practice with either their husband or their brother or their parents. And it was just so much fun to talk to these people and hear their stories and hear how they work together and what challenges they have. And it was a great experience. I really loved doing that. It was so much fun.
It seems like that would be applicable to a lot of different businesses and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I had my veterinary clinic years ago, my husband was there helping, you know, which was very nice in so many respects. Part of the problem is that we couldn't leave it. We couldn't leave it at work, and we'd bring it home.
That's what I took part of the article. Mental health and stress for attorneys has always been a big issue with me as to how we can combat that. And so that was part of what I asked them. I was like, tell us your secrets to how you can, you know, make this work.
Yeah, very nice. The other thing that stood out for me is that you've been awarded a number of honors from the Tacoma Pierce County Bar Association, right. The Washington Law and Politics. Do you have a favorite?
So two of my favorites were, the Marilyn Holzman Award from the Tacoma Pierce County Bar. It's a humanitarian award. Mm. And I was given that award because of the pro bono work that I do. So I was in the Army Reserve for 23 years, and I come from there's a lot of people in my family who are in the military. And so I always endeavor to help veterans and active duty folks, also to help other attorneys who have issues representing those people. So I did a lot of pro bono work with veterans and active duty folks over the years. And so
that's, can I stop you
sure.
just for a second? Because can you define pro bono? I mean, that has nothing to do with like, you two or whatever.
No. Although I like him, I'm pro bono.
You're pro bono.
But
okay.
It basically means free. Just free legal representation.
So pro in Latin is for.
Yeah.
And bono is.
I said it, you know. I don't
know. Yeah, my Latin's not very good.
I mean, you know, I'm
maybe
Catholic.
Benefit or something like that.
I don't know. I've never really, but to me, you know, I'm sure I knew what it meant at one time. But anyway, basically it means free legal representation.
Yeah.
And all attorneys should endeavor to provide some pro bono work. And I think most of us do.
Yeah.
But anyway, I did a lot of it over the years. And again, mainly for veterans or people on active duty, lower ranking people who, you know, yeah, you think they get paid and they should be able to afford an attorney, but nah. So anyway,
yeah.
I did that. And so that's, I think, one of the main reasons why I got that award. But the other award that I'm really proud of is when I was in the Army, I got the Military Outstanding Volunteer Medal. And again, I think that also reflects a lot of the work that I did to help people, retirees, veterans, for free. There's other things that I help having to do with helping people with PTSD and suicidal ideations, mainly veterans. That really wasn't legal type stuff. But anyway, those are the two awards that I'm most proud of.
Yeah. Well, well deserved, I'm sure.
Thanks.
Yeah. So another question that comes up is that the judge positions are often, there's just like a cloud of unknowing for the voters.
Sure.
You know, people don't pay much attention to the judges.
Right.
So how can voters tell the candidates apart? Are there certain litmus tests?
Well, I think it's the most important thing I think you want to do when you're looking for a judge is see what kind of experience they have. So again, we talked about that 5-year requirement, but I think when you're looking for a judge, you want to, I think it's just like looking for somebody who's going to, you know, be your vet or your physician or who's going to work on your car. You want somebody,
good point.
Right?
Yeah.
You want somebody with experience who's well-rounded and who's done the job before and, you know, is mature and, you know, in the case of a judge, and especially in a criminal court, you want somebody who's experienced in criminal law, who's well-rounded, who's been, you know, maybe a prosecutor and a defense attorney, who's maybe served as a pro tem judge, and who's been around for a while. You also want to look at what types of cases they've done, whether they've gone to trial, whether they've written things, who in the legal community vouches for them, things like that, because this isn't a place for on-the-job training. I mean, you're dealing with people's lives from day one. You know, and yeah, I mean, it's a misdemeanor court, as I said before. It's the lowest level criminal court in the state. But this is important. People are nervous. They're scared. It's a big deal. And so you need to believe that the person that you're voting for has judgment. I mean, judgment and has trust from the legal community as well as from the people who are going to come before them. So the lawyers, public. And so again, to do that, I think you really need to look at their record, look at their experience, where they've come from, what they've done. It's an important job.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that you were here to talk with me and explain all this stuff. And boy, you know, I wish you well on your campaign.
Thanks.
So what I would like to do is to end with a little thought, okay? You know, I wonder if people ever think about what there is that you don't know. but that you don't know that you don't know. I mean, how does that work? So I have an example. Okay, so two fish are swimming upstream when an old fish swims past from the other way and greets them. "Hey, fellas, how's the water today?" When he's out of earshot, one young fish turns to the other and says, "What the hell is water?" So thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you, Louisa. It was fun.
To get more information about Steve Krupa, you can go to his website, krupaforjudge.com. That's KRUPAFORJUDGE.com. Or you can email him at krupaforjudge@gmail.com.
I am a voter.
I will vote.
Even in an off-year election.